The following is a recording of the Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. We are located in Collegeville, Pennsylvania. We are also located on the web at www.tpuuf.org. Please come visit us.
So good morning and welcome to Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. We're located in Collegeville, Pennsylvania, and I'm the Reverend Larry Pierce, minister of this congregation. And on behalf of the congregation, I want to extend a warm, expansive welcome. From wherever you come, from very far or very near, wherever you might be on your life journey, wherever you might be on your spiritual journey, however you identify or express your gender, whomever you love, whoever loves you, we welcome you this morning into this ever-expanding circle of love, of compassion, and of justice-seeking people. If you're visiting us for the first time this morning or are new to us, you will notice that a link to our virtual connection card will appear in the chat. Feel free to click on that link and to fill out that connection card at any time during the service so that if you'd like to receive information from us about Unitarian Universalism or about this congregation, we'd be very happy to send that to you. So again, welcome. Our opening words this morning come from one of my favorite writers, John O'Donohue. At any time, you can ask yourself, at which threshold am I now standing? At this time in my life, what am I leaving? Where am I about to enter? What is preventing me from crossing my next threshold? What gift would enable me to do it? A threshold is not a simple boundary. It is a frontier that divides two different territories, rhythms, and atmospheres. Indeed, it is a lovely testimony to the fullness and integrity of an experience or a stage of life that it intensifies towards the end into a real frontier that cannot be crossed without the heart being passionately engaged and woken up. It is wise in your own life to be able to recognize and to acknowledge the key thresholds, to take your time, to feel all the varieties of presence that accrue there, to listen inwardly with complete attention until you hear the inner voice calling you forward. The time has come to cross. So in our worship service this morning, as we focus on bringing new stories to life, let us through meditation, song, prayer, and silence, and words, sense the threshold of this particular moment in our own lives, and prepare ourselves to hear the inner guiding voice as we pause for just a moment with a brief silence to prepare ourselves. And sadly, on this particular morning, as a faith community, we will also be acknowledging one among us, Jack Hurley, who has crossed from this threshold of life. And we will be pausing during the matters of the heart as well in a more extended silence to remember and to honor his life. Since Jack was a continual presence in our worship services up to the end, even when his screen was off, I felt his presence. I want to begin this service by lighting this candle in memory of Jack. And in memory of his continual presence in our hearts and in our own memories of him. And now Susan and Larry Hare will light our chalice and do our chalice lighting reading this morning.
Our chalice lighting reading this morning is entitled, Let Us Drink from the Stories That Sustain Us All, by Reverend Scott Taylor.
We gather as a house of stories.
As we learn of those who have gone before, the way in front of us becomes more clear.
As we weave together the tales of who we are, our loneliness lessens, and the web of our oneness is revealed.
As we listen deeply in those times of tender trust, we descend into the longings and learnings, hopes and fears of the humanity we share.
Beneath the wells from which we drink, there is a deeper well that feeds them all.
Come, let us tell each other tales of our thirst.
Let us drink from the stories that sustain us all.
And now our peace lamp will be lit by Preston.
After I light the peace lamp, your response will be, and with all the people of the world. May peace be with us, and with all the people of the world.
Let us join together in our gathering song. The lyrics will appear on the screen. It's entitled, Where My Free Spirit Onward Leads. And we're fortunate to have Christine Perry as our song leader and Isaac Strayer as our accompanist. So join in when you feel ready. Let's sing together. So our conversation through story this morning is a participatory one. So to get ready, just shake your hands out like this because you're going to need your fingers. Okay, great. And it's entitled, What is Your One Sentence? So Daniel Pink, who's a writer, invites people to distill the essence of their life story into one sentence. It's a way for any of us to focus and to articulate our purpose It's a way to give expression to what we want our life to mean. It's a way to say in so many words what we want the impact of our life to be. So let me give you a brief instruction here. You're going to be invited to write into the chat what your one sentence would be. And begin the sentence in the third person as if someone was speaking about you after you're gone. And imagine, so it might be whatever your pronoun, he or she or they, and then complete it there. So to illustrate this, we're going to watch a short video where some students have already done that, and we'll watch that. And at any time that you want, you write your sentence in the chat, and then I will read that sentence. Did I say five sentences? Give me a yes or no. No? Okay. One sentence, okay? At least just one sentence. Put that in the chat, and when we get to that point, I'll read those sentences. So feel free to enter the sentence at any time, but let's watch, and even as we're watching this video.
She flew with her own wings.
She was sweeter than honey.
He was a man who made children laugh when they went to the dentist.
She was like a cartoon strip. She could make you laugh and even sometimes cry, but at the end of the day, she was the only thing that was constantly bursting with color.
He brought hope to people's life by hating homers.
She kept jumping to reach the stars.
She created simple, cheap jewelry that people could wear every day.
She taught students how to dream.
He was always focused and prepared to fight for people's rights.
He was a great man that made the poor people live better and made the impossible possible.
She made people understand why animal protection is important.
She created many things that some people thought were crazy.
She was a person who showed the value of effort.
He reached his goal even though he had to go around difficult obstacles.
He was always an optimist.
He made breakthrough games that had a great impact on science.
He had no regrets in his life.
He was a friend who was there when friends were in need.
What's your sentence?
So there are a few sentences that have been entered into the chat. You still have time to do that. Doesn't look like everyone's been that chatty this morning. So I'll read the few that are here. He said, "Yes, I can." She tried to live a consequential life. She made things. She was a lifelong scholar. He left the world a better place. She tried to make others smile. She was a kind person with a thirst for learning who tried to help others. He tried to contribute. He put all his effort into everything he did. He figured out early on that life was precarious, unpredictable, and temporary, but decided to live it anyway. He tried to make a difference and did it his way. He used his wit to make others laugh. He tried to do it a little better and hope those who came after could do it better than that. He colored outside the lines and inspired others to do likewise. So maybe that's the extent of our sentences now. So what I'd like to do is invite us into a brief meditation followed by a visual meditation. So the question I want to ask you as we enter into this time of meditation is, hold your hand out here with your sentence. And ask yourself, if this sentence represents what you want to be known for, if this sentence represents what you want your life to mean, if this sentence is the impact that you want to have in this life that is your precious life to live, where are you now in relationship to that sentence? Do you feel aligned with that sentence? Do you feel distracted from that sentence, from that purpose? Do you feel you are off course and wanting to get back on course? So repeat that sentence in your own heart as we move into this beautiful video meditation, visual meditation. And ask yourself those questions. Reconnect in your heart with your sentence and reflect on those questions that I've offered.
Thank you.
So thank you for participating in that conversation through story. By adding that sentence, that your one sentence that gives some expression to what you want your life to mean, that gives some articulation of purpose and meaning for the days of your own life. Now, I saw some of you wanting to put some commas in that sentence, and I actually wanted to add some exclamation points at the end of some of your sentences. I realize it is really a challenge to try to articulate in one sentence what we want our life to mean, what we want our life to mean in the end. In our day-to-day living, sometimes we live haplessly and in a random way. Nothing wrong with that. Sometimes we're living in a hapless way and hoping to end up with something meaningful. Sometimes we approach reactively our lives, always responding to something outside of ourselves, moment to moment. And sometimes temptation is to chase the next shiny object and expect that that shiny object will hold our purpose, our meaning, our intention for this life. And there are times when we actually do live with a sustained purpose in mind, at least for a while. So the reflective question that I would ask you from this exercise that we just did about writing out that one sentence of what you want your life to mean is asking yourself, do I know the purpose of my life story? Or have I allowed my life to become a muddle of mixed and undeveloped storylines? Do I know the central theme of my life? Or do the plot lines of others dictate my days? Living a life aligned with purpose is actually an essential part of many spiritual and philosophical traditions. We all know Sophocles' claim that the unexamined life is not worth living. We know in some of the world's religious traditions that responding to a call or living one's destiny is an essential part of those traditions. Unitarian Universalists affirm and commit ourselves to the sacred right and responsibility to engage in a free and a responsible search and an ongoing quest for truth and for meaning. However, sometimes discerning our call, clarifying our meaning in life is not as simple a task as writing a sentence in a chat box. It is at times a struggle as we hack through our lives to find what actually fits us. And some of us, for various reasons, may be devoted hackers, very skilled hackers through each day of our life. And at times, we may have an experience that is a kind of a wake-up call of sorts. There could be a series of experiences or one experience that rouses us from our slumber and awakens us to our calling or our meaning, and recognize that that calling or that meaning is waning and we need to find some new way to live out what we are meant to do or some new calling altogether. Other times, finding our calling is like an arrival. We arrive at a personal sense of meaning and calling, and we recognize that it's not about struggling or striving, but acceptance and arrival. I got this particular insight from the author Araya Mountain Dreamer in her book Calling, and she expressed it this way. We eventually learn to follow the longing, to go home to what we are, to quit trying to be other than we are, and to find the meaning that's embedded already in our lives. We've had moments like this, I suspect, many of us, when we feel at home, when we have those moments of feeling like we're in the right place, we're doing the right thing. And when we try to quit, and we quit trying to be other than we are. Sometimes, however, it takes a lifetime to get there. Those in recovery have often had the awakening that what they were chasing or drinking was often drowning out what was already there within them. And they find that it is like a coming home, a reawakening, a rediscovery to who it is that they are. In the groups that I've led on conscious aging, this is one of the biggest insights of some of the participants. They say things like, I no longer need someone else's approval. I no longer need to lead someone else's life. And participants are expressing in those moments that same kind of arrival or coming home within themselves. It's never, never too late. So as someone who I admit has often been a striver, I'm a little discomforted by this idea that it's already there. It's not something that I have to keep striving for or discovering. The striver obviously has some upsides, but it also has some downsides. The striver can oftentimes achieve more than they thought they could, but the downside is they might always be striving and never resting in what is. I know that if I pause long enough, I take a breath now and then, I often understand that I too am often already in my calling rather than having to keep pursuing it. So I hope you understand that a calling is not just a profession. It is always something that we profess with our lives. For some of it, it might take different forms at different points in our lives. Mothering or fathering or arting, caring or teaching or serving a greater good. When we pause long enough, we may recognize, as Araya Mountain Dreamer says, we find the meaning that's embedded already in our lives. I've been intrigued by the work of the modern post-Jungian psychotherapist, James Hillman, especially his book, The Soul's Code, In Search of Character and Calling. Hillman advises that our calling in life is, and to quote him, inborn, and that it's our mission in life to realize its imperatives. He calls his theory the acorn theory, and his idea is also present among other depth psychologists that I've read. The idea that our lives are formed by a particular image, just as the oak's destiny is contained in the tiny acorn, so our destiny, our calling, is contained in some of the earlier images that arise in our life, and our life path is one of keep unfolding and moving towards that destiny. So he claims that even before there are life stories, our lives display themselves as images, and unpacking the images takes a lifetime. It may be perceived all at once, but understood only slowly. The oak, in other words, inheres in the acorn. And Hillman, to support his claim, provides examples of a lot of famous people. And you can read the book if you're intrigued by this, but I'll give a few examples. So Mozart was composing music for European royalty at the age of 5. He already was in that place of living out that image that was to guide his own particular life. Hillman illustrates the point that people often were born with an inherent passion for the beauty that they were to create in the world. Examples like Ella Fitzgerald or the Spanish bullfighter Manolete and geneticist Barbara McClintock. And there are people who are inspired and continue to inspire millions, like Martin Luther King Jr., Mahatma Gandhi, Mother Teresa, Bruce Lee, even, and Nina Simone, Vincent van Gogh, Violetta Parra, Carl Jung, and Mother Teresa again. What's interesting, as Hillman points out in The Soul's Code, is that several of these people did not come into their own until later in life. So, there might still be hope for all of us. So think about your own life. Some of us who became teachers played at being teachers with siblings when we were children. I'm looking at the teachers in the room. How many of you play? Yeah, hi, Susan, I see that. Yeah, okay. We played at it, even as children. Some of us who became clergy dressed up and did mock masses or preaching with the faithful or those who we had captivated among our neighborhood friends. Something may have awakened in us when we played our first musical instrument or planted our first garden or danced our first dance. We knew that there was something in that that was essentially us. So perhaps you have similar stories in your own life and of those that you know that confirm in some way Hillman's acorn theory, an image that guides you from an early age to become what you become. Now, of course, Hillman's ideas are somewhat controversial. He does clarify that there's also genetics and environment and economics and so on. So it's not all written in the book before you get here, such that you don't have to do anything. That would be, he claims, fatalism, of course. In fact, many of us actually defy what might seem like our fate. We are not defined by our circumstances. And sometimes our biggest obstacles within us or around us can be our most significant incentive. I suspect many of us know that in our bones. There are many people whose drive to fulfill a singular purpose was bigger than the circumstances which stood to oppose them. Often, we take what we are given and we do something with it. It's not fate. It's what we do with who it is that we are, with our circumstances. So Hillman shares a very poignant example in an interview about John le Carré, the great spy novelist. He writes, John Carré had an absolutely miserable childhood. His mother deserted him when he was young. His father was a playboy and a drunk. He was shifted around to many different places and homes when he grew up. He knew he was a writer, however, when he was about 9. But he was dyslexic. So here was a person with an absolutely messed up childhood and a symptom that prevented him from doing what he wanted to do most. Yet, that very symptom was actually part of his calling. It forced him to go deeper. Any symptom can force us to go deeper into some area of life. I suspect if we were actually to have a conversation about this, that it's the same in our own lives. What may seem like a symptom on the outside may actually have been what has oriented us in the world in a particular way. So what is it for you that could be a symptom on the outside, but has perhaps sensitized you in some way to what otherwise we would not be or we would not have accomplished? Think alongside of me for a moment. What is that something that others looking at your life from the outside might consider a symptom or some limiting circumstances, something unfortunate? Something that you may be urged to get rid of, and maybe even you hold this particular view yourself about some aspect of yourself. If it wasn't for X, then I could be, then I could do. I'm not going to ask you to raise your hands, but I suspect there's some inner recognition in many of us of this kind of formula within ourselves. And at the same time, we have oftentimes lived out the opposite of that formula. Could it be like le Carré's dyslexia that we have, or we can transmute some of these so-called symptoms into what I like to call our soul signals, those signals that urge us on in spite of, and maybe even because of, our limiting conditions. Oftentimes, this realization comes to us retrospectively, not when we're in the moment. We discover later that if it weren't for X, I would have never developed these strengths or this aspect of who it is that I am. Now, of course, I really don't want to over-spiritualize this, yet there are clearly some of what the world considers symptoms or insurmountable conditions that might have actually served to strengthen or develop capacities in us. That's when we begin to tell a different story about ourselves. We take what may have seemed like a problem and we understand how that has oriented or sensitized or driven us in some particular direction when we look at the full trajectory of our lives. Could it be that what the world considers symptoms, in Hillman's words, could actually be signals for our own soul? Now, I know it's not going to be 100% of the case, but in many cases, we could ask ourselves, who would I be if it were not for this aspect, this condition in my own life? So I'll use myself as an example in this regard. There are indeed some of these aspects in my own life. I ask myself sometimes, who would I be if I were not a gay person growing up during the times in which I grew up? I fit all of the profiles of the overachieving gay, described in the best little boy in the world. And it's that phenomenon that Andrew Tobias, the best-selling financial writer, first wrote about in 1973, although he used a pseudonym, John Reed, when he wrote it. It's this idea that one finds one's self-worth where one can. And oftentimes it comes from trying to prove one's worth or achieve towards one's worth. But as I reflect upon it, I recognize that it could be that being out of the ordinary in a culture such as ours, that other qualities also come alongside that as well. For example, being able to take a perspective on things from the margins, and even knowing that there are margins that exist outside of the normal, the expected. Or there is the not fitting into the conventional or the expected. Maybe that could have helped me find and to cultivate an inner strength that was not always dependent upon others' approval. Withstanding put-downs and bullying also could have created an alchemy in me of finding a deeper inner truth and sometimes an impermeable Teflon shield that doesn't give undue power to those that bully consciously or unconsciously. And of course, we most often recognize these benefits or these strengths emerging from our circumstances, as I said, retrospectively, not while we're in them, not while we're going through them. We recognize that they have shaped within us and they may eventually serve us in some particular ways. In the living of our days, we don't recognize that there is an image that guides us and calls us forward and calls us beyond our circumstances and what others consider perhaps our symptoms. Again, I call these soul signals because they are powerful examples for us that our circumstances do not define us. Another example I think of is that of B.J. Miller in his TED Talk, What Really Matters at the End of Life. Look it up sometimes, it's wonderful. It's had more than 9 million views, B.J. Miller. He's also the co-author of a newly released book, A Beginner's Guide to the End, Practical Advice for the Living Life and Facing Death. So there is some unfortunate circumstance in his life. As a sophomore in college, he and his friends decided to climb on top of a parked commuter train. He grabbed upon some wires, overhead, and immediately an electrical current went from a wire, flew down him through his arm, and blew out his legs. Consequently, he gives his talks seated on a stage with a stub of the left arm and no left hand, and with two prosthetic legs. Today, many years later, and after being a patient, which he defines as being patient with suffering, he realizes that his work now as a physician and a hospice palliative care doctor that was influenced by this experience of being a patient. His eyes have been opened to the experience of dying. With limbs gone, he learned that he could no longer reject the fact that we all die. He's dedicated to bringing intention and creativity to the experience of dying. And he realizes that the scariest things for most of us is not dying, it's the suffering. So consequently, he's dedicated himself to teaching professionals and other caregivers the capacity to tease out the suffering from the dying. He recognizes that necessary suffering oftentimes unites the caregiver and the care receiver. And he declares that it's that kind of uniting in which healing can happen. When we show compassion, we recognize the real root of that word of compassion, suffering together. So Miller has actually dedicated his life to making space physical and psychic so that life can play itself out all the way, so that living and dying can become, he hopes, a crescendo to the very end. Because he had his particular experience, he can claim, as he puts it, that parts of me died early on. That is something we can all say one way or another. And I got to redesign my life around this fact. And that, he claims, has been a liberation. He shares this one experience when he was in a burn unit recovering soon after his accident, and the nurses were all complaining about a snowstorm and about their concerns about their drive home. He didn't have a window in his room that would allow him to actually see the snow. But then the next morning, one of the nurses came and kind of snuck into a snowball into his room. And she let that icy ball of snow sit on his skin. And he could feel a very cooling sensation to his burns. And while that snowball was melting, it became a perfect moment for him and to his audiences that he talks about this experience, that he encourages us to recognize that we may all find a shock of beauty in what time we have left. May we in our living and in our dying love such moments, he says ferociously. So to live ferociously in each moment may mean that we have to pivot from one story to another in our present time. Oftentimes we have to let go of that story that has guided our life and to find a new story. Oftentimes, I think of it kind of this way, that the story is the intermediary. And oftentimes the events of our life are interpreted by our fixed story. And so I think sometimes we need to replace that fixed story, no matter how long it takes, with a new story that allows us to see the events of our lives in some different way. When we are able to drop the familiar story, the story that we tend to latch onto, we oftentimes are able to open up to new possibilities. To be able to live ferociously in each moment may mean that we have to pivot from one story to another in our present time. We have to move from symptoms to what I call soul signals. And we have to ask ourselves, what do we really want our life to mean? And to do so, it may mean we have to be able to pivot from the old explanations that we've often given in our life stories and are often rooted in the past and move to new expressions that we want in our life, what we want our life to mean in the future. So this is the application part of our sermon this morning. I want to invite you to think with me just a little bit about this in your own life and lead you through just a kind of a reflection here, which I borrowed from one of my teachers, David Drake, in narrative coaching. There are four S's. S as in the word soup. They are situating, searching, shifting, and sustaining. Say those after me. Situating. I'm looking at the teachers. They love this repetition. Searching. Shifting and sustaining. So to begin, let's just settle in for a few moments and breathe and name something that's bothering you or concerning you right now. And for our purpose, don't pick the most concerning or the most difficult, but be with that concern and that issue as you take a few deep breaths. And just notice what happens now when you just are with your concern. And in this first step, we just ask ourselves, how do I tend to explain this current situation? This is just a way to listen to that intermediary piece, the story, our usual story about it, and to kind of recognize, what do I tend to tell myself and others about it? It's really a time to listen to what is. Are you hearing that familiar story in yourself right now about that situation? The second S is searching. So what are you longing for in this situation? This is a time to kind of complete the sentence that begins with, what if? And then listen to what you're longing for by completing that sentence now. Here's how I describe it. Here's how I tend to explain it. And that is the kind of the situating, and then the real searching then allows you to recognize your longings about that situation. So these first two steps are the ones that often keep us in our old explanations of what is. And then now we pivot towards new expressions. The third step is shifting what really matters to you. When you discovered by exploring your what ifs, is there one that really stood out to you? Is there one that you articulated that you realize could be the first sentence of a new story? What if I did this? What if I followed this leading? What if I stopped doing this and did more of this? What if I really stop postponing that which I've postponed and live out more deliberately what it is I feel called to do? And then finally, we ask ourselves really what really matters about that. If we were to do that, it allows us to recognize that it's like shifting our gears and trying to move into what it is that is aligned more with our sense of meaning and purpose at this time. And the fourth S is sustaining. The question here is like, what works? What are you willing to do about expressing this in your own life and in your own actions moving forward? So I did that in a quick way to just kind of give you the framework, but hopefully you get a sense that some of our typical explanations don't lead to new experiences. It's only when we ask ourselves what really matters and what works, what can work moving forward, that we're able to make that transition to a new story. So think about that this week. Think about how you might keep explaining the same situation over and over again and expecting it to lead to some new experiences. and allow yourself to create some new experiences and see them through the lens of a new explanation. Our life is oftentimes about experiencing. And so I want to close with these words by John O'Donohue that were part of the opening. It is wise in your own life to be able to recognize and to acknowledge the key thresholds, to take your time to feel all of the varieties of presence that accrue there, and to listen inward with complete attention until you hear the inner voice calling you forward. May it be. So now we do take a time to reflect on our own lives, the things that we're holding in our heart with joy, the things that may be wearing us down in sorrow. And there will be a time here to also acknowledge Jack Hurley and his loss and what that means for those who love him, those who care about him, and those who know him. So let's take that time right now to reflect on our memories of Jack Hurley. Then we'll have a musical interlude and give you an opportunity to share your own joys and your own sorrows. So let's first hold on to our remembrances of Jack and celebrate his life for a minute. And then you'll get some instructions from the moderator about how you can participate after the musical interlude.
As we extinguish this chalice, let us read the unison closing words by Albert Schweitzer that will appear on the screen. At times, our own light goes out and is rekindled by a spark from another person. Each of us has cause to think with deep gratitude of those who have lighted the flame within us. And now we'll have our closing song. The lyrics will appear on the screen. Holy, holy way.
And let me give a little instruction to the closing song, if I could have your attention. You'll notice that it is a call and response song. So the C line is the call. So we'll let the singers sing that. And the R line in bold, that's our response. Okay, so you can see how that's lined up on the screen. That's a little bit of a rock tune. So rock it out, enjoy it, and sing it, and invite this holy, holy way into our lives as we conclude our service with this song.
Holy me, Lord, in a holy, holy way. Oh, let me show.